No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. We've got Seth Cox on the line, and this is a bonus show because we didn't know we were going to plan on having it, but there were some news that had to be had. So tonight on Revenge of the Birds Radio, we're going to be talking about the NFL schedule release and some more about the NFL draft. I didn't think we had any more to talk about, and Bruce Arians and Steve Keim had their pre-draft press conference, spoke with the media, and so we're going to talk about that. But we've got Seth Cox on the line. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing fantastically. We're now getting awful close, and after going through the different position groups, and I thought we were going to be good, and then the NFL went and released the schedule, and it's like, I guess we have to have our show. This is show number 115. I know you haven't been for all of them. You've been on the majority of them. 115 shows. That's a lot of talking.
Oh, it's been fun, though. It's enjoyable, and and it's the best way, honestly. Like, the writing portion is fun, but I have so many thoughts that, sometimes like a writing forum, it's just, even a long form piece is just not long enough. And let's be honest, even I don't like to read long form pieces. So, listening to somebody talk is much easier for me than reading an article. So I enjoy this.
And we're glad to all those who are listening. RevengeOfTheBirds.com is the website. It's SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. Seth Cox is part of the staff there, sometimes writing, a lot of times talking here on the show. He also hosts the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast that you can find on iTunes or SoundCloud or at their website. In terms of how you get a hold of us, how you can listen to the show, you can listen on Blog Talk Radio or on the site RevengeOfTheBirds.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and now streaming on Google Play. So if you use the Play Store, you can find Revenge of the Birds Radio. When you go to Play Music, subscribe, and hey, you'll have every single one of our shows available to you to listen, because nothing says time to pass by and listen. Nothing says enjoyment than listening to Seth and I talk about the Cardinals, right?
Yeah, that's what's enjoyable here. Is we're at the end of the draft period. Everything that's coming out now is basically false, and it's just going to be a fun time. And when I say everything coming out, anything that's not a direct quote from somebody in charge is false. And then most of the direct quotes are probably lies as well. So
it's all a bunch of misdirection. So we're going to talk NFL scheduling, because the Cardinals schedule is out, and which to me, basic reaction, we're going to talk, give our reactions and predictions. Which are the various games, which are the best ones, which are the ones that they need to watch out for. We're going to talk briefly about a rumor that was going around the internet a little bit about the Color Rush uniform for Thursday Night Football and how atrocious it is. And then we're going to talk about what Bruce Arians and Steve Keim said on their Tuesday afternoon presser. We're going to talk quarterbacks. We're going to talk about immediate impact, a little bit about offensive line, centers, safeties, kind of a little bit of everything. So you ready to talk?
I am. I'm looking forward to this. The fake color rush, the lies coming out of the draft. Like, it's a good time for all the falsities.
Oh, and the internet loves falsities, and the internet loves rumors. So let's talk about the schedule first. Now, it happened quickly. I guess it was a little bit ahead of what we expected. It went from we're waiting to the next day. Oh, watch out for an announcement for the schedule release, and then tomorrow schedule release, and then we have our schedule release, and now we know the Arizona at least four primetime games in the first opening the season at home, New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football, and with five of their, including three of their first four, they have a stretch of three straight primetime games, playing on Sunday Night Football, on Thursday Night Football, and then on Monday Night Football, Then they go to Carolina. Then they have a bye week right in the middle. And then they will only have three home games in their final eight games, including two in their last seven. So, initial reactions on your reactions you really?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint anything at this juncture, but just initial reactions. I think it's a fairly good schedule for the Cardinals. I think it sets up for them to, you know, make some hay early, and that's what we want to see from the Cardinals is to get on to, you know, back into a fast start and things to go. Obviously, you know, the Patriots game is a coin flip, and Vegas has it as that already. But, you know, they drew some really good games. You know, Buffalo in September, like, heck yeah.
Miami in December?
But even Minnesota, you know, it didn't matter now. You know, they get – a lot of their road games are controlled environments. You know, that Miami game could be interesting. Maybe it's rainy. But, I mean, you look at it, they have Atlanta, you know, in the dome, so it doesn't matter. You know, the Vikings in their new dome doesn't matter. They get Carolina in October, so it's going to be beautiful in Carolina. It's just it couldn't have set up for a more, you know, magical type season than what it did. Obviously, I think you would have liked to had the schedule flipped a little bit maybe and saw more on the road early and then at home late. But, I mean, overall, you really can't complain, especially getting New England at home to start the season when it could be without a certain quarterback.
I think that's never going to happen. But, yeah, in fact, if I had to pick a week to play the New England Patriots, it would be week one in Night Football because week one was always a electricity, a million counts, and that would be the perfect opportunity to play one of the best teams in football. I'm not even worrying about the possibility of Tom Brady might be suspended. I don't think it'll happen, but you know, that's a great matchup to start, and it's a great way to start off the year. So you've got a challenging game, you've got a home game, it's on national television, so everyone's going to be up for the game. Assuming that they can pull off a win, that is a great starting point for the Cardinals. Another one of the reactions was to see, well, they got the four primetime games, but I noticed something. They're all in the first 7 weeks of the season, and then nothing's scheduled after that. It is almost to me that the league is still on they are taking advantage of the Cardinals' popularity early, but hedging their bets just a little bit, just in case, you know, they become Cardinals and do what Cardinals teams have done historically and not play up to their abilities. Or just and so there's nothing late in the season. Naturally, they can still flex games, but there's no Thursday night game or Monday night game late in the season.
Yeah, and that's what that's what is happening here. What they did is they took last year's hot team, and it's the Arizona Cardinals, and they gave them, you know, a ton of early games to capitalize, or early, you know, primetime games to capitalize on what was a big season. And then, like you said, if things, you know, at the midway point are, you know, 3-5, God forbid, 2-6, then all of a sudden they say, okay, we don't have to worry about it in the back half of the season, because that's what you don't want in the back half of the season. But you could definitely see, you know, the Saints-Cardinals game being a flex-worthy game. You're probably not going to see, like, that Miami game because they'll probably get protected because that'll be the one time the Dolphins are, you know, on Fox type thing and stuff like that. But it sets up nicely because it – shows that the league has faith in the Cardinals, but it also leaves room for, like, if there's an implosion, we don't have to be sitting here at the end of the season going, gosh, what could have been, you know, all the games will be run out at 2 o'clock like they are, and it'll be over and done with, and we can get on with our evenings and not have to all sit around the TV and be upset about a 3-10 Cardinals team playing on Sunday Night Football, which isn't going to happen. But you know, that's how they hedge their bets.
And the Cardinals do have a really rough patch in this schedule. In fact, that their prime time roundup, it actually starts with after the 49ers. I think the 49ers are not going to be good. I thought they were going to be better than they were last season. I'll put it that way. And they were just a dumpster fire. Nonetheless, those three games, in fact, four games in a row that they have from week 5 to week 8, pose some interesting challenges, because they're going to start off that they're going to play week 4 at home against the Rams, a Rams team that is, you know, gives the Cardinals troubles. Defensively, they look a little bit different, but still, they still have that strength and physicality up front. Then they turn around 4 days later and have to play San Francisco on the road. Division games on the road, Thursday Night Football, that's a recipe for potential disaster. Then they play the Jets after on a mini bye, Monday Night Football. That's a great storyline, but just another very physical, well-coached team defensively. Then they play the Seahawks on a slightly short week, only then after that to travel to Carolina. So they have themselves a very physical 3-week run between the Jets, the Seahawks, and the Panthers. But heading into those, I mean, going into that week 7 game against Seattle, they viably could be 6-0 or 5-1. And so there could be a lot riding on that game in terms of hype early on in the season that could, you know, one, propel them into a late season streak, or like their game on the road did a year ago, or it could kind of let some air out of their sails as well.
Yeah, and it's clearly going to come down to the end of the season, and you know, like you said, the Saints weren't very good. The Dolphins, who knows? It's a new coach again. The Skins, I mean, that's a home game. You really shouldn't lose that game. But I think it's going to come down to, obviously, Seattle in week 16 and then week 17. It's going to be an interesting game in LA against maybe a rookie, right? Like
Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz or Jared Goff. I mean, that's going to be a fun game. And I think we'll look at that game, and it could really be the you know, the fork in the road, if you will, for two franchises. If we're talking about playoff implications for both teams, and I don't think the Rams will be there yet, even if Carson Wentz is as good as I think he can be. I don't think they'll be there yet. But, you know, it would be really interesting to see a Cardinals team at, you know, 12-3 and a Rams team at 9-6 and you know, scrapping for their playoff lives.
Now you know this. It's the Rams, so they're going to be 8-7 in that game.
exactly. But that's the point. Like, wouldn't that be fun? Now, if I had my way, I shouldn't say that, because we saw the Cardinals have Seattle in the last game last year, and then, you know, they kind of didn't try hard, supposedly, and then it kind of carried over into the playoffs, even though it didn't really matter, supposedly. So maybe it's good that they have Seattle in the second to last week of the season, because it'll be probably pretty difficult for them to have anything locked up by week 16 of the NFL season.
Well, and viably, that was that game probably will decide if the Seahawks are as good as they have been. Week 16 probably decides the division, honestly. Probably does.
Probably, and that's what you want. So, I mean, and that's all that matters. It's fun that way.
Now, you look at kind of predictions. I considered it a conservative predictions. I don't like going, you know, the homer in me said, they're going 16-0. Like, there's no way they're losing any of these games. Because there's the Patriots, yeah, they can beat the Patriots. The Buccaneers definitely. Basically, I was looking at, 13-3, as the very optimist. 13-3 minimum. Then I had to reel it in because you can't expect a team to go 13-3 2 years in a row.
Especially a team that's never – I mean, right. Say what you will about the Arians regime and everything. They've won one playoff game. I mean, they've been great in the regular season. They've made – in his three seasons, they've made the playoffs twice. That's great, but they won one playoff game, and both of their defeats, in the playoffs, have been humbling.
Yes.
Let's put it nicely, humbling. And so, and let's be real, they, a lot of flukiness both ways in that Packers win. So, It's a thin line when you're a veteran laden team at the most important positions, and for an Arians offense, you're talking about an older quarterback, an older receiver. Obviously, we're hoping David Johnson continues to take that step and be the running back that we saw for his first three games. I believe it was, maybe it was four, but I think it was three. And then the playoff game. So against Carolina. So, all of that is taken into consideration, but again, it's an Arizona Cardinals franchise that notoriously hasn't, put together great season after great season. And that was the best regular season in team history. Is it fair to expect them to do the same thing? Probably not. Is it realistic to think that they can? Absolutely. It's a reality because they're good enough, but it's also a reality that they could take a step back because they are, relying on a very old Carson Palmer who, we've seen quarterbacks after that age, that 36, 37, where all of a sudden it seems like something goes and they can't do everything as well. But all that being said, I don't see any reason that they're not at least 11-5. And I'm always one that says, 11-5 is kind of the median. I wouldn't be surprised to see them 13-3. I would probably be more surprised if they were 9-7, barring, catastrophe at the quarterback position. So, but I think that, 11-5 is probably the way to go. And then you work from there.
And that's what I did. I looked at the division. My logic was this. I look at the division games, and I think, and I've said this for several years now, 4-2 is the benchmark, is the absolute minimum that you can do in the division and expect to win the division. So I start at 4-2 because I can't. They should go 5-1. They should. They should sweep the 49ers. They should sweep the Rams. And I don't think you say they should sweep the Seahawks. I think you think they split. I think they'll probably end up 4-2 because I see that San Francisco game as or maybe it becomes Week 17's meaningless game in Los Angeles. I say four games in the division. Then I look at some of these other games. I look at New England and I look at the New England game and the Jets game. I think that's a split. If I'm thinking conservatively. The Cards will split those two games. They will beat the Bills. They will beat the Dolphins. They will beat, and as you're going through the AFC South, they should go 4-0. But I'm going to look at the 2 week East Coast trip that they're going to do, which they requested. They're going to Minnesota in Week 11 and Atlanta in Week 12. They will stay on the East Coast again. I see that weekend, those 2 weekends being a split as well. I have Carolina probably a loss. I'm a bad fan by thinking that. But, playing in Carolina, I know that there was a lot of meaning in that game. But I can that's a game that I don't assume is a win. And so I see an 11-5 season with the potential to be, as good as 14-2. And that's the trend. If you're looking at what the Cardinals did, they went from 10 to 11 to 13. They continued to improve each year and play a little better. Although after the season they had last year, you could say the team could go 12-4 and still be an improved team. There's that caveat.
Exactly. And you look at the Broncos, and that's kind of the model I've taken for the, what this Cardinals franchise needs to be. You look at the Broncos, Peyton's, you know, second year, record setting, get to the Super Bowl and then just get thumped. I've kind of viewed the Cardinals similarly. You know, they weren't as dynamic of an offense. I know that that's like heresy, but you look at that Broncos offense, that's a historic offense. The Cardinals is like top 35, maybe all time. So it's not like they, you know, were on a historic levels the same way. Unless you want to bring out the fancy, like football outsider stats that give you all those fancy things. But I look at it the same way. Like, you need to get better defensively and you need to be, more diverse offensively. And I think we've seen that towards the end of the season. And then it just kind of, the wheels came off in the Carolina game on both sides of the ball. So, but yeah, I think you're right. Like, they can take a step back record wise and be better prepared for the postseason. And let's be honest, after last season, there's literally nothing that matters except winning a Super Bowl now. Like, nothing else actually can be considered a good season anymore, because you want to take that next step as a franchise. And so you can't go, well, we went 11-5 and we're a wild card team and lost in the first round, but we were a wild card team again. Like, you can't be that team anymore. You need to look at it and go, it's Super Bowl or bust. And I know that's the way Arians and Keim have looked at it. And you know, as fans, we need to start embracing that. And that's not a bad thing to embrace.
But it is scary. It's scary. And it's a dangerous thing, because if you know, that's when expectations happen, and you don't want to. Well, what happens is, we've seen with the Suns, we've seen with the Diamondbacks here locally, under the weight of expectations, they underachieve a little bit. Now, they always, at least in the Diamondbacks case, they act big, grossly underachieving. They won't make the playoffs. The Suns, they had championship aspirations, championship expectations, and were still having great seasons, and it felt sour. And that's the kind of the fun and scary part of what this season is, because we have these expectations. But if it doesn't, say they lose in the conference championship again, does it sour? Because, yeah, it's one of those. It does it sour because they didn't ultimately make it, or do you then look back 10 years from now when things are off and you're like, oh, it wasn't so bad? But yeah, we're looking for a Super Bowl. They need to make it to the Super Bowl, and that makes it all work out, because, I mean, that's how this team is built.
It is. It is how this team is built, and honestly, like, I kind of like it, right? Like, yeah, it was a bittersweet run for the Suns, as you said, but it's more fun to be the Suns than it was, you know, to be the Timberwolves, and it's more fun to be the Cardinals than it is the Browns. And let's be honest, historically the Cardinals are the Browns, so
they sort of are.
So, you know, let's embrace this for this time, because it could, hopefully it's not, but it could be fleeting. I mean, you know, not everybody lucks into Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck in you know, quarterback. in quarterbacks, and you know, not everybody finds Tom Brady in the sixth round. So, you know, it takes some time. And you look at teams like Oakland, who were, you know, pillars of NFL success for what, 30-40 years, and then they went on a 15-20 year just streak of being awful. And you know, it happens really fast, and it happens because of one position, and that it's an unfortunate reality of the NFL. But that's what it is right now.
Now let's look at the games of the schedule. If you had to pick the two biggest games of the season, two or three, what would be the two or three biggest games of the season for you?
I think that Carolina game is going to be big. Like, you don't want to put too much stock into it, because it's just a regular season game. But I think it's important to get the monkey off the back, so to speak. The last two times they've traveled to Carolina, because the season Carson got hurt, when they won that game, that was in Arizona, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So yes, that was yes.
Two times they've traveled to Carolina have really not gone well. And I'm not even saying it's important to win. Obviously we would love them to win. I'm not even saying it's important to win. I think it's important that they play well, because they haven't played well in Carolina. Like, that's the dirty secret. They haven't played well in Carolina for a little bit. So that just needs to happen. Then you kind of go through it, and I want to say that Vikings game is too close to the Carolina game, because they have their bye week in between Carolina and then the second San Francisco game. I wish that Vikings game and that Saints game were flopped, because that, I think that would be the other one. I want to say the Patriots, but with the Tom Brady uncertainty, I don't want to pick that one. Like, as soon as we know Tom Brady's healthy, I think it's a very important game, because I think it's important to make a statement to the NFL and yourselves early that you're still a contender. Because let's be honest, I mean, until Tom Brady's like not playing, the Patriots are contenders, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
It's probably a cop out, but probably that Seattle game, that second Seattle game, like, because New Orleans, Miami, Washington, Atlanta, we don't know who they're going to be. And like I said, that Vikings game is just too close to that Panthers game to, I don't want to, you know, talk about those two games being critical back-to-back games. Like, that's just, you know, you don't want to do that early.
For me, the best games, it starts with New England. I don't care with whether Tom Brady plays or not. That is the tone setter for the season. With Tom Brady out there, doesn't matter how they win. If they win anyway, that sets the tone. And it kind of says, hey, we're still here. We're not a fluke. We weren't a magical something season aberration. We're here, and we're just, that's a big game. I don't say the second Seattle game. I think that first Seattle game, when they're on Sunday Night Football again, only at home, that's a big game because it sets a tone. Again, like the game last season, that game in Seattle was the first time they saw them. It sent a message to the division, our division. It's ours. Stay away. You can't have it. And for two reasons. One, they need to do that this year again against Seattle, who is still talented. And two, they just can't. They have not beat Seattle at home since Russell Wilson's debut. And that was John Skelton, Kevin Kopp. So keep that in mind. Since Russell Wilson's first professional game, they have not beaten Seattle at home. And that they've got to get over. And then game number three is right after that. It's the Carolina game. I like you, I don't think they need to win. They need to look competitive just because they've been god-awful anytime they've been there in recent years. It's just been abysmal, and they need to get that out of their head, because let's expect Carolina to be as good as they were last year. Maybe they won't be 14-2 good or 15-1 good, but – they're still outstanding defensively. They still have Cam Newton. They still have a very good offensive line. And now they're out adding Kelvin Benjamin back. So that team will be in the mix in an NFC South that still, I mean, they're still the cream of the crop there. So you might need to get that monkey off your back to say that way it's not this aura of yuck in Carolina. Those are the three games. I picked the first Seattle game or the second Seattle game, and then runner up, and the one that's just going to be a fun game to watch, Bruce Arians against Todd Bowles. That's going to be fun.
That will be fun, and it'll be enjoyable to watch what Bowles does, except they don't have a quarterback, and so, like, you can't really, like, I hate to harp on it all night, but, like, if you're on the quarterback, he's not going to be there. He's going top 10, I'm telling you.
Connor Cook.
That, you know what? That's a reality. That is a reality.
All right. Let's move on from that. Coming up next on Revenge of the Birds Radio, we're going to talk about just an odd thing, and we're going to spend a little bit of time on that. We're going to talk yellow jerseys. That's next on Revenge of the Birds Radio. Back on Revenge of the Birds Radio, so we've got the color rush thing that every team's playing on Thursday night, and every team's a color rush team. The, you know, on Twitter, there was released something that this one Twitter account who's broken some, leaked some information in the past, and on it is a card that has all the color rush colors for all the NFL teams. Now, as many, they said they got that 2 weeks before the schedule came out, and so obviously there were things that could change. But on there, yellow jerseys for the Cardinals. There's been plenty of people, Kent Summers and Mike Jarecki, but well, Kent Summers say there was a bogus report. Mike Jarecki said it's subject to change. I put it out there on the website. Now, I'll tell you this. The whole world is reading about it. Thousands and tens of thousands of people are interested in these yellow jerseys. And if this were true, what in the world is the NFL thinking?
That's a good question. I don't think it's true. I think it's fake. But the biggest reason it doesn't make sense is because they'll be in San Francisco. So I guess they're the away team, so San Fran. But see, in that color scheme, San Fran is gold. So again, right, that doesn't make sense. Like it wouldn't make sense. It'd be too close together.
And that's where things could change if they're the same similar color scheme, because that card was supposedly released, that they got a hold of that 2 weeks before the schedule came out, and so they didn't know where things were fitting, and these were what to give an employee. But still, I mean, why yellow? I don't understand. I get yellow's on the beak, and that's kind of the color that'll look. Yellow versus gold, it's terrible. If you're looking at it, because they try to make them different, the Cardinals already have a red-on-red combo.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say the one thing, if they were going to do something different, I'd bring back a white-on-white that would be more reminiscent of a throwback back to the days of the 80s and the 90s when the Cardinals had those all-white unis. I didn't love them, but it would be better than yellow.
And I think that's what it's going to be, honestly. You look at it, I think it'll be like white with a red outline around the numbers. And well, you think the like numbers would be white too, or maybe they'll make those yellow. I don't know. Maybe that was the numbers that are going to be.
You know, that's a thought. Because so, that would make a little more sense, because you've got the yellow / gold beak. You've got the yellow and the Arizona flag. That would make a little more sense.
But no, it doesn't make sense. If I was designing these Color Rush uniforms, which I think is a really cool idea, I really do, I'm going for the Cardinals, white. And then all white. I think the red striping would be perfect. And then do whatever, like gold. If you really want to put a gold or yellow, you know, on there, put that in the numbers. I think even like a silver number would look good. I know it's not really traditional Cardinals, but like having just a shiny silver number would make those look really really pop off the white with the red trim. So that would be my type thing.
And for me, if there's one thing that I wish the Color Rush would do is not so much the uniforms as the helmets, even the throwback help. I'd love to see the Cardinals do the NFL do something with helmets. Now, they haven't, because of the whole player safety thing of bringing other helmets, which I understand. But wouldn't it have been fantastic to see the old white and creamsicle Buccaneers helmet again? It wouldn't have been fantastic.
It would be fun.
So. A red or a black Cardinals helmet. I'll go a black Cardinals helmet would be so good as one of their options with the red Cardinals side on. I think that would be incredible.
No, I agree. I'm with you. I think that would be a lot of fun to see something different. And I get the tradition. I really do. The white helmets are traditional Cardinals helmets, blah blah blah, but like let's be kind of honest, like the only tradition for the Cardinals is losing, like so why not
losing in bad quarterbacks?
Yeah, so why not, you know, change it up a little bit? Like I get that those championship teams back in the 40s and 50s wore the white helmets, so that's why we do it. But then, you know, outside of like the Don Coryell era, when have the Cardinals been anything. And then you look at their time in Arizona, and it's been, you know, it's been basically 20 years of nothing, 3 years of good, and then 3 years of really bad, and then 3 years of good again. So I don't know. Like if you're, you know, the Packers, and you have that tradition of, you know, all those championships and things like that, that's one thing, but I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Here's a crazy thought. Instead of like the black or the white or the red, could do something very Diamondback. Take that gray that they use. I think that gray paired with the red that they use could be an interesting combination, at least. Kind of taking the theme that the Sun Devils have done with at ASU with some of their uniforms, and then the Diamondbacks, the gray potentially could be an interesting look with the white helmet with the little stuff. Yeah, for a color rush game, I'd prefer that to some of the color schemes that we saw on TV last year. That was just off. Like that gold thing that they played in Jacksonville. Ugh, blah.
Yeah, exactly. Like you don't. You don't want, I don't know, like, I get it, but I just think it'd be cool to experiment, like, if you're going to experiment with the Cardinals uniforms, like you said, like, experiment with the helmet, too, like, do something fun and funky and different.
Yeah, that's enough of talking about uniforms. What we're going to talk about now, draft stuff. So, up next, we're going to talk the draft reaction, some of the draft presser that Steve Keim and Bruce Arians said. So, we'll be talking draft in just a moment. And at Revenge of the Birds Radio, back, we're talking NFL draft, we're talking Arizona Cardinals, and we have some actual quotes, not just rumors, not speculation, not the gas bags in the media, not the internet scouts of Twitter, not draft Twitter, not, you know, all these other guys. We actually have Steve Keim and Bruce Arians talking, and we've got lots of things. So we've got lots to talk about. Talk about quarterbacks. That's always fun to do. They brought up safety position. They brought up offensive line, particularly the center position. They talked about getting impact. They talked about character grades, not just one, but two character grades. And I forgot to put that on the show prep, but let me just throw this at you. Interesting thing how this year the Cardinals are adding not one, but two character grades to factor into what round grade they give them. And I like the notion where they have a character grade, and then they also put right next to that a football character grade, which is kind of like the idea to balance that out. It sort of mitigates the risk, excuse me. And so you've got a guy that's got off-the-field problems. What are the type of football player on the field? What type of teammate are they? Do they love football? And that's where I think that perhaps that they came up with that after dealing with Tyrann Mathieu, because while he had obviously the off the field character issues were real and enough to take him off the board for a lot of teams, his football IQ and his football character as high as you can get it, because he just adores the game. What do you think of this, and who do you think that perhaps affects in this class?
You know, I've been trying to kind of figure it out. You wonder how much Kim Dichie is involved in this, right? Like,
right.
That's the big one, you know. I hate talking about this because, like, I don't have a way to verify some of the things I've heard, and so, like, you know, take this with an ocean of salt, because it's, you know, it's just stuff that's passed along to me from people that I trust, but I'm not in the business of being an insider. Like, I don't want to be Mike Jarecki. I'm happy doing what Jess and I do here. So again, like, this isn't me trying to break news. This isn't me trying to stir the pot or, you know, anonymous scout told me, you know, but there are guys that have been passed along to me that are legitimate off the field concerns. But the thing is, like, so Joey Bosa is one of them, and I don't think he's available, right? Like, he's not going to be available.
Right.
So I don't think he matters. Noah Spence matters absolutely 100%. They have to know that he is done with whatever his lifestyle was that got him kicked out of Ohio State. Because remember, he got kicked out of Ohio State. He didn't get kicked out of, you know, Stanford or Notre Dame or, you know, any of these other, like, he got kicked out of Ohio State. So you have to, you know, I don't even want to joke about it, but you basically have to murder somebody to get kicked out of Ohio State. Like, so, you know, I'm assuming Noah Spence is in there. A name that, you know, I've mentioned on a podcast before, that has been passed to me. Paxton Lynch's nickname is Party, because Paxton likes to party. So, you know, maybe they have some questions about his commitment. I don't know how true any of that is. I'm just telling you what I've heard. So, you know, all of those names early, because I honestly think it matters more early than late, right? Because, like, if you pick a guy with one of your fifth round picks, and it kind of talked about this, like, having those two fifth round picks allows you to take a chance, right? So obviously Kim DJ is not going to be there in the fifth round. Like, it's just not going to happen. But let's say Kim DJ is there in the fifth round. Like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we can pick him because it's a fifth round pick. It doesn't matter, right? Obviously, like, a guy like Sean Oakman is dead to this draft period. Like, he's done. He's never going to get drafted. Tyler Higbee is an interesting one.
Just recently mocked the Cardinals in, what was it, round six by Dane Brugler.
Dane Brugler's mock draft. And he had some interesting things to say about Muslims. That's for sure. And I don't think the Cardinals have any practicing Muslims on their team right now, but they have previously.
They have, yes.
So, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, those are the guys that, like, jump off the page, obviously, with those, you know, questions about these guys. And
so let me ask you this question, because when it comes to Robert Kendiche, and it came from actually the podcast I listened to you and Justin, and he said, he's really kind of an odd duck in everything. But if we look at the football character, would you say that he is a high football character? I think it was one of the comments that Justin said on your show was, I don't know necessarily how much he loves football, but he loves making splash plays. He loves making big plays on the field.
Yeah. And that's what it's about. Like, is he a guy that is going to revel in the spotlight, or is he a guy that's going to fold and be like, well, I got paid and honestly, I'm not a huge football guy, and so I just got to get out of here, you know? And that's what it comes down to. And that's an interesting thing that Steve Keim said at the very beginning of the draft. And it's kind of aggravating to me when he says it. And I think Steve Keim and Bruce Arians are wonderful. So, you know, again, this isn't me, like, lamenting them, but it's just from a frustration standpoint of what's the word I'm looking for? I'll think of it. But, you know, it's one of those things where Keim said, you know, you can grade the player, but you can't grade the mind or something to that effect and the heart.
And that's where they miss. They don't miss on the player. They miss on the mind or the heart. They miss on the person.
Yeah. And accountability was the word I was looking for. So that just, you know, upsets me because it's like, then you're basically saying I'm never wrong on a prospect, like, ever. So I can never miss on a prospect because if I miss, it was the prospect's fault. It's not my fault as an evaluator. And you know what? That's something like people on Twitter do, right? Like, there's a couple guys, I won't mention names, but there's a couple guys that say, you know, I can't grade off field or I can't grade medicals. Well, if you know that Jalen Smith's knee broke in half, and you still have him as, you know, a top five player, then he never plays, like, that's a miss. Sorry to tell you, like, that's just kind of how it works. So, you know, it's frustrating to me as somebody that wants accountability to hear that. But he did go on to say that, you know, we do miss and that's something that makes us miss and blah, 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 something, you know, to that effect. So it's good to hear. But then sometimes, like I said, it's frustrating to hear that because you're just like, really, you're kind of making a cop out for yourself. Like, if you do take Robert Kendiche and then he's not great and you say, well, you know, I can't grade what, you know, his heart and his in his love for the game. And it's like, well, if you were afraid of that, then don't take him, right? Like, if you get Cardale Jones, you know, in on the whiteboard, and you know, he can't explain the options on the routes that you're asking him about, then don't draft him. Like, don't think you can teach him that. Just say, oh, well, you know, we'll go a different route.
Oh, and then don't say, well, you draft him because he's got all the physical tools, but he, you know, he didn't love the game enough to learn it.
Yeah, exactly. And that, it just, it's frustrating as an evaluator that that happens, because, you know, it becomes a cop-out to me. But I think overall, like, that's what they're trying to do. And here's what I'll say, and I know this is going to probably upset people. Here's what I'll say, though. They're probably saying this because of Jonathan Cooper, right? Like, and maybe Troy Nicholas, too. Like,
maybe, because guess it, Bruce Arians referred to Jonathan Cooper without actually naming Jonathan Cooper. As they talk, you know, they label him a bust, but, you know, sometimes injuries happen and they kind of just ruin careers. You take a guy who's never been hurt ever. Then he has, you know, two or three freaky injuries, and they label him a bust, and it wasn't as it was a bust. He just got hurt. That's Jonathan Cooper, the freaky, you know, you've got the freaky leg break, then you've got the knee, then you've got the broken thumb. It was like, and it really was. It is unfortunate that, because you can tell the talent's there, but it got, and you know, I get what they're saying. He didn't necessarily bust himself, but he was a bust because of what he was expected to do. And that's unfortunately, that's why he had to go. It's why he had to go.
It was the reason, because as soon as you don't believe in yourself, and as soon as, you know, your coach can't believe in you, then it's over. Like, there's nothing more that can be done. It just has to end. And that's the unfortunate reality of it. And so,
and that felt like a lament. Like, when they said it, it felt a bit like a lament on their end for what could have been.
Right. And so, like, you know, and injuries are different. Cause like, I don't consider Andre Wadsworth, like, injuries in the pros, I should say, are different.
Right.
Like, again, like, if you draft Miles Jack and then his knee disintegrates in 2 years and you're like, oh, man, didn't see that coming. I'd be like, well,
yeah, you should have.
We all knew that the knee was an issue. Like, same thing with Jalen Smith. Like, if the Cardinals took Jalen Smith at 29, he doesn't play in 2016. And then in 2017, he's, you know, Kevin Minter or worse. Then it's like, what was that for? And, well, you know, we can't, you know, we couldn't grade the injuries. It's like, no, you really could, because we, like, all knew. Okay.
Draft Twitter can't evaluate the injuries. Pro NFL teams with their millions of dollars can.
Exactly. And so that's the way you got to look at it. So, you know, I think the Cardinals are honestly in a really good spot, because in Arians talked about, or Keim talked about this, like, their roster is really good. You can say, you know, they absolutely need positions. Like, Arians saying we don't have any needs is, you know, that's just coach speak, because you're not going to say, oh, we really need a, you know, a center. And then AQ Shipley, you know, is in there and he's like, oh, I suck. And so they all think I suck. You know, you don't do that to a kid, but you know, they probably need to get a center. They, or a guy that can play center or guard, because Evan Mathis is, I think, 36. So, and he's on a 1 year deal. So it's not like that's a long term fix. Do they have any immediate needs maybe for 2016? I still think they need another pass rusher. I think they need more bodies in the secondary. I'm not necessarily saying they need starters in the secondary, but I think they need quality athletes in the secondary to ensure that.
Because you have to have depth. I mean, you just
take. Because you're talking about Tyvon Branch, Tyrann Mathieu, and starting, and then, like, they have played like one combined healthy season between the two of them. So, like, really? And that's not like a knock on the roster or anything. It's just reality. Like,
it is.
You can't look at that and go, oh yeah, we're okay. And then, you know, when they get injured again, go, crap, we didn't see that coming. Like, you just have to be ready for that stuff.
And, you know, they looked last year that when they signed both Sean Weatherspoon and Corey Peters, what happened to both of them?
Exactly. And you're right. Like, and that's the reality of it. Like, you need, like, everybody's like, oh, there's no need to draft defensive line. Look how deep and good the defensive line is. Did nobody watch the defensive line get torn apart at the end of the season because they were tired, because they were old? That's what happens. Like, that's the reality. You know, obviously, they just cut Redding, so he's gone. But, you know, you have Frosty Rucker, who's, you know, what, 33?
33, I think.
Yeah. Calais Campbell's 30. Brian, who's 32, 33. So you've got three really veteran guys.
But you have to remember, Corey Peters is old in his body, too. Yes. Like, he might only be 27, 28, but both of his Achilles have blown out. So, you know,
that makes them like 23, right? Because they're new Achilles.
Exactly. you know, and then so then you go behind those guys and you have okay depth, but do you really want Josh Morrow playing, you know, 65 snaps a game? Do you really
It doesn't work.
Exactly. Do you really want, you know, Ed Stinson playing 70 snaps a game? No, you don't want all that. So, like, you have to
you've got Gunter, and he's the one dynamic young player. Exactly. And then Xavier Williams with potential, but again, he was an undrafted guy, so and he only plays really one position. That's what, you know, I've been pounding the table now for some time. You know, the more we've talked about this in the draft, is drafted, they shouldn't, nobody's talking about drafting a defensive lineman. Nobody here locally is talking about drafting a defensive lineman in round one. That's absolutely, if they can get, and I mean, especially in a draft like this, that's probably position number one that you should really consider.
Oh, I wasn't on mute. Jeez. Look at that. See, I thought I was on mute, and then I muted myself. No, I agree with you 100%. I think Chris Jones, Jonathan Bullard, Robert Kimdiche in round one. I've said on Twitter, I would take Javon Hargrave in round one. Like, that's how much I think of the kid from South Carolina State. Like, I don't think there's a huge drop off from Sheldon Rankins as, you know, defensive tackle one to Javon Hargrave. Rankins is another guy that would be an interesting fit. So, like you said, if all the good guys are gone at 29, don't reach, clearly. But, you know, in round three, you could get a guy like Hargrave, Willie Henry. I love the kid out of Northwestern who's being talked about in the fifth and sixth round. Name's escaping me now. I just call him T-Rex because his arms are like 31 inches long, but he's 6'6". So it makes no sense. How is he 6'6", but his arms are that of a 5'9 corner, like slot corner? It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, there's a lot of questions that can be asked, but I really think getting impact on the defensive line is the best way to go about this, because what I think it does is it improves your team for 2016, but it also gives you, you know, hope down the line in 2017 and 2018, where you probably don't have to address as many, you know, positions. The other thing is you can make a case for the same thing. Now, I would say on day two and three, unless you get a guy like Cody Whitehair or even Nick Martin at 29 that you're really happy with, but I think you can make the same case for those guys on day two and even day three of finding center guards in round, or, you know, that may not have to play in 2016, but can step in 2017. Because I think Shipley's done after this year, right?
Yes.
So Shipley's got 1 year left. Obviously, Evan Mathis has 1 year left.
Earl Watford's got 1 year left.
Yeah, and we still don't know what DJ Humphries is. So you want to start getting prepared for these exoduses and being ready and preparing, you know, your future. And really, they talked about it on the conference call or in the conference. The defensive and offensive lines have been neglected. And now that they're being, you know, picked, I'm not sure how great the picks have been. They haven't spent a high draft pick on a defensive lineman. I'll give them that. You know, they haven't drafted a DT or D end high, but So I think they need to do that. But that's, you know, that's where I'm at with the front three or four and the offensive line going into this draft, taking away from what they talked about too.
Interesting comment is it kind of brings us to that, is the idea of immediate impact versus long term. Both BA and Keim were very adamant about, very clear, said you'd like immediate impact. I think, you know, we knew Jonathan Cooper was supposed to make an immediate impact. It looked like he would, then he got hurt. Daniel Buchanan did make an immediate impact. DJ Humphreys, that was an interesting case because draft night they were talking about him competing at right tackle. Now that, for whatever reason, that just might have been coach speak. Then at the end of rookie camp, they talk about being the best situation for DJ would be to sit a year behind. So in the matter of about a week, literally, going from drafted in round one to the very next weekend after rookie camp, at the rookie camp there, they're talking about being the best world for him would be not playing in year one. And that's essentially what happened. And then we hear comments in knee deep about needing to mature. And it sounds like they missed a little bit, but because, and there was a comment by Peter King, I think I mentioned it on a show a couple of times ago, is that it became very clear early on that Humphreys needed work, that he wasn't ready. So they drafted him, hoping, believing he could make an immediate impact and compete with Massey at right tackle. But then all it took was a week. And then in the offseason weeks to follow to realize, okay, he's not. And that's when they, okay, we're going to play the redshirt card. So basically, they had the intention of having immediate impact. And now, say they draft a guy like Cody Whitehair, or, you know, I'm not convinced that any offensive lineman they draft in round one is, if that they'd even start. Would they start over AQ Shipley? Maybe. Maybe not week one. I mean, Shipley has a reputation of, at this point in his career, of, you know, having a starting job and losing it. It happened in Indianapolis. It happened in training camp and in the preseason last year. And it might happen this year too. So, you know, the Cardinals have, it's not like they went into last year's draft looking for a guy to replace Massey just to sit for a year. They wanted him to play, and he just didn't.
Exactly, and that's what you want to see going forward, is you want to see them hit on those guys and then and bring in competition that makes things, you know, better. So that's the thing, like a defensive lineman, I don't know if anybody at the beginning of the year is going to beat out Frosty Rucker, and nobody's going to supplant Calais Campbell. And quite frankly, I don't know how many of these guys are going to come in and be able to beat out Rodney Gunter. But what I do know is the idea of a Gunter, Calais, Kim Diche, Chandler Jones on passing downs or playing from ahead, defensive line is a lot more appetizing than Gunter and Frosty Rucker, or Gunter and Xavier Williams, or Gunter and Corey Peters match with those guys. Like adding a dynamic, you know, Jonathan Bullard that can be a devastating one, you know, one gap pass rusher in passing situations early is a game changer. And you have to, that's the way you have to look at this draft and understand that you're not a team, you're not the Arizona Cardinals of 2004 and 5, you're the Arizona Cardinals of 2016, where your holes aren't really that big. And in reality, you're drafting for situations and for down the road, as opposed to immediate impact.
And that's why I love the defensive line, because it's one of the few positions on the field that's rotated. You get a guy, you get a Kim Diche. He's going to play 10 to 15 snaps to start, but by the end of the season, he's going to be playing 30 to 40 to 50 snaps. And so you draft a cornerback, he's probably not even beating Justin Bethel out. So he might not see the field all year unless there's an injury. You draft a safety, same thing. You draft a pass rusher, that's another one where you could see, I mean, but they already have a rotation a bit, so they would have to crack a rotation. Defensive line is a position where they can actually make an impact and go down the road because they actually see the field. Because the other ways of the other positions can only happen in the case that there's a player that's just yuck, they're bad, or there's someone get hurt.
Exactly. You look at these positions and what they can do, and I think you have to look at defensive line. I would still say pass rusher because you can never have too many. You know, I think I've said all along, I think safety corners, you know, round three, round four pick, where you can get a guy like a James Bradbury, maybe a Kavari Russell out of Notre Dame, and you can get a, you know, a guy that's long and lean and athletic, and then, you know, put them in the rotation a la Justin Bethel of, you know, 2 years ago, where they may only see five snaps, but they're going to be five important snaps, and they're going to get them, you know, up to the speed of the game. And then in a year or two, all of a sudden they can play, you know, 60 snaps a game, and you don't have to worry about it. Because, again, you're not talking about the Arizona Cardinals that are desperate for anything. You know, that's why and we can, you know, we can end on this if you want to. That's why I'm not going to be shocked if Laquon Treadwell is the pick if he falls to 29, because the Cardinals aren't just looking at what they need in 2016. They're looking at 2017 and going, okay, we're probably going to lose Michael Floyd, and maybe Larry wants to retire. Maybe we bring him back. But, you know, is it really fair to continue to expect him to be even what he was this year? Probably not. So all of a sudden, you know, you need some younger talent. It takes about a year to get into rhythm in BA system. So maybe in 2017, you know, Treadwell's playing the Floyd role, and then in 2018, he's playing the Fitzgerald role, and then, you know, you've got an impact player, but it took 2 years, and nobody likes that it takes 2 years to get impact from that guy, right? But it wouldn't shock me. I don't think he's going to be there. I think he goes 10 to the Giants, but it wouldn't shock me if, like, if for some reason he fell, if he was that pick. Because there's no reason to send your wide receiver coach out there to meet with Cody Core, who's going to be there in the sixth or seventh round. I'm sorry. there's no reason.
So quarterbacks. We had some interesting comments about quarterbacks. Two of them, actually. The question was to Steve Keim, how many first-round talent quarterbacks? He says five? That's an interesting number. And we know there's probably – we know likely three is the number we're going to see. Definitely Jared Goff, definitely Carson Wentz, definitely Paxton Lynch. And then we throw into the mix Connor Cook and then John Gruden, who said he would absolutely be shocked if Christian Hackenberg isn't drafted in the first round. That's an interesting one. Do you see all five going in round one?
No. But I do see four. I think Cook sneaks in there. I think I wouldn't be shocked if he went to Denver at 31 and, you know, he ended up being a quarterback, the first quarterback to reach the playoffs, because I'm a Connor Cook fan. Like, I would be fine with him at 29, and I'm not going to say boo to anybody. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but, you know, I don't really care. What you guys
think, so. But he wasn't captain. He wasn't captain.
I know, right? Like, my quarterback is my captain. Is that like that's like the lesser known version of that Robin Williams speech? And then, whatever Walt Whitman speech, sorry.
But Bruce Arians does say, now the question came from the media was, outside of the top three, that we're assuming that is Goff, Wentz, and Lynch, who are the guys, how many guys are there that you see as being, you know, as could fit? And then he said, there are about five guys that fit what we could do. 6'5", big arm, at least 6'5", big arm, and can move around, come from solid programs. I pull up the quarterback list, and I'm wondering if he's fudging a little bit on the height, if he's, you know, 6'5", he's meaning 6'4", or if he's also just not including, if he also included the big, the, you know, if he included Lynch and Wentz and Goff. Then that means there are a couple other guys. So there's Cardale Jones. So I'm looking here. I've got a list of quarterbacks. I've got it sorted by height. So we start at 6'5". So we're going to start at 6'5". We've got the kid out of Gannon. I don't know how to – Liam Nadler. Don't even know who he is. John Gibbs Jr. Yeah, I don't know who he is. Joel Staive out of Wisconsin. Okay, that's a guy that could fit the profile. Would you say that he's got the big enough arm for an Arian system? I know no. He has accuracy, so he's okay. So no arm, no. He can move around. With Cardale Jones, yes, that's a big yes.
Yes.
Then there's a kid, Kyle Nolan, out of Georgetown. Never heard of him. Blake Fronapfel, no, out of Massachusetts.
He's terrible.
Then we get into some, okay, when we're talking about solid programs, Jake Coker at Alabama, is he known for his arm strength?
You know, Coker was an interesting one to me. He's a guy I get a lot of crap for on our group text because I like him. But I'm going to say no because I don't – he's a guy like at best could be Kirk Cousins. Like, and that's like if every single thing felt right. But more likely he's probably I can't even think of a guy that like more likely he's not even in the NFL. Like, honestly, like he's smart, I guess. And he's hardworking, but I don't see it with him.
Nate Sudfeld at Indiana.
No.
Travis Wilson out of Utah.
Too injury prone. I think too many injuries. I just don't think he'd be, a viable option, to be completely honest.
Steven Rivers out of Northwestern State. I wouldn't qualify that as a solid program. I don't know anything about it. So then we dip down to 6'4", and I think that's where it's happening because then you got Connor Cook, you've got Christian Hackenberg, you got Jacoby Brissett, and you got Jeff McDriscoll. All names that we've heard of. Now, Louisiana Tech, I wouldn't call that a solid program. I mean, it's a program. Then you get NC State. That's a Keim. Keim loves that place. That's where he went. Christian Hackenberg, Penn State, yes. Michigan State, you know, Connor Cook, yes. California, Jericho. So now you finally – so was he fudging the height? Because then we're looking at who are the five guys that he said could fit. I don't know if it's five outside of the top three or if that's five including the top three. But I know that's – you know, we know Cardale Jones is part of that. We figure that Connor Cook is probably with that. Jake Coker, maybe. Sudfeld has been mocked to the Cardinals a couple of times.
Ugh, he's awful. Sorry. Oh, I thought I was on mute. My bad. No, I was kidding. no, you know, I think it's including the top three, and then I think it's Cook and Cardale. But you know what? Hack wouldn't surprise me. I texted a buddy earlier, and I said something along the lines of, the Cardinals say there's six quarterbacks that fit their system and what they like. And he texts back, by their history, one is Hack. And I was like, oh, crap. Like, and it's not that I'm against Hack. Like, I think he can be a good ball player. It's just, it's weird to see a guy regress. And I know everybody likes to be like, oh, Cardale Jones regress. Well, unless you don't like stats that dictate differently, he didn't. So, you know, yes, he regressed in the win column. Oh, wait, he never lost a game. Never mind. So he didn't lose any games ever as a starter, and he completed a higher percentage. He did throw more interceptions. So there, he regressed that way. He threw more interceptions as a second-year starter. So that's the one thing that was bad. But, you know, you look at it overall, I don't know. If there's five outside of the top three, you're going to kill me to find two more because
right.
I can get behind Cook, Cardale, and Hack even a little bit. But like Sudfeld, no thanks. Brissett's okay, but I don't know. Driscoll's awful. I don't know. Like, I know some people like Driscoll and have him as like quarterback two or three. And to those people, I say, ha ha. But
well, we know that Dak Prescott's gotten some look, but he's only 6'2".
Yeah, and I don't know if he's a fit for the Cardinals. And you know, the more we talk about this, I think we'd hit on like six other players that fit the playing grade, or you know, whatever the comment Keim made was. So you have Cardale, you have who, you know, they people question his maturity, obviously the Twitter stuff and things of that nature. You have Cook, people question his on-field leadership. You have Hack, people question his throwing his coach under the bus. And you have Dak, who is the one off the field, you know, on top of the other stuff, or, you know, the only one that's kind of off the field question. So maybe that, you know, and then Brissett and Driscoll both transferred. So maybe they have questions about that. Like, hey, why did you transfer? What was that about type thing? So I think those are all, you know, to kind of go back to the beginning, the more we talk about it. Yeah. Those all make sense too, to be those, like, what kind of player on the field are they grades? Not obviously not from like an ability standpoint, but from like a teammate standpoint.
So talking centers, centers and safeties were brought up briefly as really offensive line wise. That's the position that there is a quote unquote need. And they made an interesting comment, and you've especially talked about that. They're not necessarily looking for a guy that played center in college, but a guy that they can project as a center. And they said probably, you know, they threw out there's like three centers and then 15 guards who can play center that they're kind of look at. And they said there's a bunch between like round two and round six that, and he said traditionally, Bruce said that, you know, good centers frequently used to be guards. And so the name that came to mind, Cody Whitehair. Then you've got Christian Westerman, who's being projected that way. He's not, you know, he's not right there. So those are a couple of names out there. I know Nick Martin's played a little both. Now, did Jack Allen play center and guard?
I think he was just a center. I'm looking just a right center. Now.
Who are the other guys that played, or was that Glasgow? Was it that he played a little both? Because he's just weak, super tall for his position.
Yes, he's a very tall guy, and it's very odd to see him, you know, be an interior offensive lineman. But you know what? Maybe.
So who other guys might that? Because they're talking even all the way down to round six. Guards or even tackles that project even to centers, or have you heard any of that?
You know, so Westerman's a name that we've heard, but he's going to go in round two. I don't like – you and I have watched a lot of AS, and not to get off topic too much. Sorry. This is why I can't pod there. This is why I don't write anymore, because this is what happens. But you and I have watched a lot of, you know, ASU games. Did you ever see Christian Westerman as a second round pick?
No. That's the nicest way I can say that. Cause
it's just a weird phenomenon that's occurred. And like, he's,
and maybe that's simply because he, you know, he needed to be out there to tackle. But I don't know, because, you know, maybe he becomes a second round impact center because he was misplaced in college, but he was playing out there out of necessity. But I don't know. That's just, it's weird to think of it. Why in the world would someone draft him in the second round? Because that seems weird.
Yeah. Spencer Drango from Baylor is a guy I've heard, but he's tall too, but he's going to move to guard. I don't know. Like, I don't know what they look for in moving a guy from guard or like from tackle to guard to center. Like, I don't know how they decipher that. Like, oh, this guy can be a center, right? Like, I'm not going to try to lie through that, the whole thing. but the kid out of Oregon State, Isaac Suamalo, was supposed to be like an All-American, and he earned some freshman All-American nods. And then, like, I think he blew out his knee, foot injury. Sorry. And he can play both on, you know, both or all three interior line positions, both, but like guard and both guard spots and center. So he's an interesting one, 'cause he'll be like around 4 or 5. Emery talked about Max Turek on the podcast last night.
And you have questions about his explosiveness and athleticism since his injury.
Yeah, and that's what you know, you kind of have to look at and to see if he's all the way back, really. Coming through this, blah, blah, like, all these names are awful. Can we just skip this draft? But, yeah, I mean, like, Whitehair, Westerman, who was the other guy? Suamalo, Glasgow, and who's the other guy they're talking about a little bit? Nick Martin played guard a little bit. Who was it? I'm going through all the names I can find right now. Ted Karras from Illinois. and Jermaine Ifedi is the other one. He played tackle at Texas A&M, who's now, you know, like a offensive line factory, apparently.
Apparently.
So, but he's going to get moved inside. You wonder where, how far inside. So those are, you know, but he's 6'6 as well. So, but he's got like vines for arms. And there is a movement towards a lot of those longer guys because, you know, you can't, you're not going to be able to block Aaron Donald one-on-one. If you can't move a guy like, I'm trying to think, that has short arms, that can't latch on to Aaron Donald, because as soon as it's body to body, like Donald's won, and we saw that last year quite a bit. So
Shipley, a guy like, for example.
Yeah. So a guy like Ifedi, with those like 36 inch arms, all of a sudden, like he may not be as quick, but he can lock out Aaron Donald and maybe give the quarterback a half second longer. So, you know, those are interesting names. I honestly, like, Evan Baum is the guy like I would focus on if you're waiting till day three, because I think Jack Allen's going to go on in round three. So Baum would be a guy I think if you wait till day three to focus on. So Amilo, same guy, or same type of thing. I think he can play from there. Like Ted Karras, like I said. There's a kid's name. Alex Huddle. Huddle. I don't know. Out of Bowling Green, but he's tiny. Like, and by tiny, I mean under 200 or 300 pounds. So it's hard to project guys that are smaller, that played at smaller schools and like weren't overwhelmingly good. So, but those are guys that are interesting because I don't know how far down, like, you'll move somebody, right? Like I don't know how far down you can move a Jermaine Ifedi. Like, can he go to center? I don't think so. And like, what would be the point? That's kind of, you know, that kind of takes away from what he does well, which is, you know, uses length at the point of attack. So there's those questions I have.
The last position that we'll briefly touch on was the safety position. And Bruce Arians talked about kind of things changing. And I think this is where we can see into what happened, why the Cardinals didn't offer Rashad Johnson any contract, why they didn't put a higher tender on Tony Jefferson, is because they are trying to move away from the traditional, you know, back deep safety and in the box safety. They're in the box safety and Deion Buchanan, they just turned into a linebacker. Tony Jefferson in the box, but they want flexibility out there. So they've got a Tyrann Mathieu who can do everything. They bring on Tyven Branch, who, if he stays healthy, literally can do anything. He's rangy. He can cover outside. He can cover inside. He can blitz. He can cover deep. And that's kind of what they're saying. And then someone asked about TJ Green. Steve Keim called him a 6'2" Gumby doll, just super raw. And some of the, you know, you look at the Clemson tape, especially in the championship game, you say, I don't know. But he said he's just scratching the surface as potential. He might even be an outside cover corner.
Yeah, I don't see that. Like, I'm not a huge fan of any of the safeties, but – or I shouldn't say that, any of the Clemson safeties. Like, Green's a nice ball player, but – at some point you have to like make a lot of plays, right? And so he's a nice ball player. Like you said, he's rangy. He ran a 4.34, so he's fast, right? And
yes,
I think that's kind of what people are looking at all of a sudden.
The hips. He said he's super. He's not stiff at all.
No, that is true. He has really flexible hips. Like you look at it,
whatever that means. I mean, when I say that, it just sounds funny out of my mouth. But.
No. Like it means that their hips are loose and they can turn.
Yes, yes.
They can turn in coverage, and that's what matters. Like for a safety, like you watch TJ, and as much as we all like TJ, like his hips don't allow him to just you know, flip his hips and open up and run down the seam with a tight end or like a slot corner. But you watch Tyran and it's the exact opposite. Like he can, like if he gets, for instance, I think it was against San Francisco, not the interception, but another play where a guy kind of beats him on an out and he just opens up and runs because he has that flexibility to move quickly. You look at it like TJ Green's a nice ball player. Like he's going to get overdrafted. I think he's going to go in round two and the Cardinals don't have a pick. So he'll probably go at 29. I've already told my buddy that like they're going to take somebody and I'm going to be like, ugh. And it's not like that he's bad. It's just, I don't know what he does better at 29 than like Kevin Byard at pick 92 or even in the fourth round would do from Middle Tennessee State, outside of the fact that Byard is only 5'11", you know, but he ran a 4.4 40. He put up a bunch of reps on the bench. I think I got 22 reps on bench. Like he's a freak athlete, and he had like 19 interceptions in his career. So he does a lot of, you know, he made a lot of plays in his career, which is important. You look at a guy like, for instance, Von Bell out of
Ohio State,
and you know, he doesn't have the height speed, but what makes him, you know, necessarily worse than a guy like TJ Green? So that's what I look at. Like, I think people teams, and we see this every year, get too enamored with guys that have like unteachables and think, well, I can coach this guy. And then it just doesn't happen. Now, I'm not saying that's TJ Green, because, you know, I honestly don't know TJ Green. So I can't be like, oh yeah, this guy's, you know, never going to get it. Like he could be a very good player and I could be completely wrong. I just wouldn't want to take him at 29. Like if he was there at 92, I'm all about it. Whatever. Like, I think that's where you start to bet on athletes in on day two and especially day three, you bet on athletes to make plays. So, and, you know, grow up and be good. But like I said, Kevin Byard, even a guy like I'm trying to find his name real quick. It's going to kill me that I can't remember. Oh, no, I can't remember now. I'll think about it. But even a guy – oh, James Bradbury out of Samford. Both those guys, like Bradbury's listed as a corner. I think he is going to be a safety in the NFL because he's 6'2", and he ran like a 4.4. But he's a little bulkier than Green. Like Green's, like you said, he's Gumby. And Bradbury kind of is built like Patrick Peterson. So, you know, now that doesn't mean he's Patrick Peterson. I never said that. But
No, you did.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you mentioned Patrick Peterson. That's your comp. That's what you get. So, but yeah. So I think, you know, a Green at 29 for me would be a mistake, but you know, they know a lot more than me.
All right. Well, if you're still listening, thanks. We talked a long time about a lot of stuff and we're going to have one more. I know we have two more shows before we probably slow things down. Next week, coming up on Revenge of the Birds Radio will be our pre-draft show where we will mock the first round. I'm guessing that's what we will do. Try to get some insight maybe as to what the Cardinals might do, if there's any more insight to that. But each of us will go down the draft, and it won't be the alternating picks. We'll both give picks to say he'll pick, Seth's going to make a pick, and I'll make a pick for the Rams and this and that. And we'll see what happens, and we'll talk about that. And then the week after, we will have the draft. Seth will be in Chicago at the draft with Justin Higdon, his podcast mate for the NFL Draft Breakdown. And I will be at the team facility. So we will have two different points of view, two different perspectives coming up for the week after that. After that, we don't know. We'll see. We'll kind of go what happens. So thanks for coming on, Seth, as always. Talking NFL problem, draft, second football. And
it's been fun. And like we're at the time of the year where there's still a lot of good information. And I said it last night, if you don't listen to the Draft Breakdown podcast, first off, shame on you. But no, honestly, like if you don't, you know, if you haven't listened to it, follow Emery Hunt. He was our guest last night at FB Game Plan. And Emery will be the guy I go to if you know, when the Cardinals pick, guy I've never heard of out of Northeastern Kentucky State University, because Emory has actually watched all these guys. When the Cardinals selected Rodney Gunter last year, that was my first text. I said, "What do you know?" And he sent me to his game page where he was at the game, I can't remember what game it was, and he gave me all his game notes. And, you know, he talked about how he looked like a nose tackle, but could be athletic enough to play outside in a 3-4 defense. And look, that's exactly what he was. So follow Emory Hunt, ask him questions, you know, about guys that you don't know about. You know, it might take a couple minutes for him to get back to you, but it's going to be, you know, it's good to know, and it's good to learn. And he's a good follow on, you know, at this time of year, especially as it gets into day three and you're going, huh? What? Yeah, he'll have the answers for you.
All right. Thanks for coming on. This is Remnants of Roots Radio signing off. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Talking NFL draft next week. Go Cardinals.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.